Hey everyone, this is your friendly neighborhood podcast host, Jennifer, from the future. Ooh. The episode that you are about to watch is our first live panel. And we were super excited about doing it. And I think it came out really, really good. And we're going to do more. So stay tuned for that. We're working out like a venue here in Asheville, North Carolina. So if you're in Asheville, you'll have the opportunity to see us live probably either starting like the end of this year, beginning of next year. And hopefully that's something we'll do periodically on like a regular basis. We'll then go up as regular podcast episodes, except that they will be locked at our $5 Patreon tier. So they're special episodes in addition to our regular episode every month. At the $5 tier Patreon, those unlock and you'll get all those live panels and stuff. And they're on a lot of different topics. Right now we're doing a lot of like herbal topics. It's definitely a lot about herbalism and herb world right now. We'll probably branch out, especially if this is going to be like a regular thing. There's some off-topic things I want to do. There's a lot of things I want to do. Some of those episodes will not be live in-person events because the people that I want on the panel are not in town. So a few of them will also be just regular panels like you've seen. We've done the seasons, the fall and the spring, and we've got an upcoming summer one. But anyway, I just wanted to tell you about that, and that's really, really exciting. All right, so I just want to thank again our lovely panelists for volunteering their time and their expertise to this panel. Also, thank you so much to you at home or wherever you are listening. We really, really appreciate it. All right. I've babbled way too long. You've probably been like, stop listening by now. All right. Here is the podcast and I will talk to you later. Bye.
Hello, everyone. Hi. Welcome to our first live podcast.
And thanks for bearing with us.
We're going to start the panel now. The mics are just for the recording. I think you went over that already. Okay, awesome. All right, so we're gonna start. Hello everyone, my name is Jennifer Braverman.
And I'm Ellen Selm.
And welcome to our first live podcast from Stories from the Earth,
where we explore humankind's relationship and connection with the natural world.
If you like what you see and hear today, we encourage everyone to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We're almost everywhere, where you can get more great interviews and book reviews on similar topics.
Today, we will be chatting with some regional herbalists and amazing wise women. Jeannie Dunn, founder and formulator of Red Moon Herbs. Lori Burra, founder of the Certified Organic Hemp and Herb Farm Greenheart Gardens. She is vending here today, as is Red Moon Herbs, I believe, yes. Byron Ballard, local author and educator of Appalachian Folk Magic and Hill Folk Hoodoo. And Sierra Foley, director of Appalachian School of Holistic Herbalism. This is quite the power panel. So let's give them an applause and thank them for sharing their time with us. We have come here to talk about a serious but important topic, one which illustrates a good reason as to why we should all try to source our food and herbs as locally as possible, ethically forage and wildcraft, or grow your own.
Supply chain is a word that we have heard a lot in the last 3 years during COVID. We've seen the effects when stores run out of almost anything in a few days after the state of the emergency was called, and how long it took them to recover. Like, I couldn't find sweet potatoes or garlic forever. It was pretty crazy. Even today, there are large holes in the store shelves. And I remember rice being out of stock for such a long time. So our discussion topic today is how to keep it local when supplies chain fails, as well as an overview of these ladies' top recommended herbs for food and medicine security, reliance, and self-sufficiency. By definition, a supply chain refers to all the activities, people, organizations, information, and resources required to move a product from inception to the customer. For example, in the consumer goods space, this likely spans raw materials, production, packaging, shipping, warehousing, delivery, and retailing, i.e. the sequence of processes involved in the production and distribution of a commodity.
So if you and your business has been affected by any failure in the supply chain in the past or even currently, could you share a story on describing how that impacted what you're up to?
Hey, it's Jeannie from Red Moon Herbs. I just want to clarify, I've been director for about 10 years, a little bit over, and it was founded by Karina Wood and Jessica Godino, just for the record on that. But yes, I was very grateful to take over because we're all about fresh plant material and getting what's right in your yard. I would imagine the most impacted way we were impacted during these recent years is bottles, because a lot of bottles, glass bottles, are made in China. So if we can support those companies that do make, there are some made in America things that we can buy, certain jars and bottles, but a lot of the 1 ounce, 2 ounce, and 4 ounce do come from China. So that's one way we were affected during the last few years.
I don't really have a business per se. I travel and teach, and I'm a writer. And I've been talking for, I don't know, 20 years about relocalizing everything we can, because we had lived for a while in the age of cheap petroleum, which means people could grow lettuce in California and ship it here, and that didn't seem like that was such a big deal. Well, those days are over. And you don't need to do anything to get lettuce except buy some seeds and grow it. It's not hard. So what COVID and the mess up in the supply chain did for my teaching is that I could point to what was going on and say, this is what we're talking about, is that you have to relocalize everything you can relocalize, including your, and I hadn't even thought about that, your bottles and what you are shipping in, if you are shipping. So the more we think about the earth right here with which we dwell and what grows in it, what other resources we have, because y'all are an herb company, you're not a bottle maker, so you form an alliance with somebody who makes the other products you need. And that's how we are going to get through these times, if we get through them at all. There, on that cheerful note, I'm going to give you Lori.
So hi, I'm Lori. I am Herb Mama is my product line. I am very fortunate that I have produced very smart children. And when COVID hit, I use a lot of sunflower oil. My oldest said, you know where sunflowers come from? They come from Ukraine. Let's get it now and stockpile. I said, thank you, hon. It's almost doubled in price. I'm almost done with my stockpile. And she has a friend who's a glass blower, so I get a lot of local glass for some of my products. Not so much my tincture bottles, but I'm thinking, like, maybe we can work on that. I grow the plants that I work with, and I grow the plants that I use as fertilizers, so that didn't affect me at all. My business is on the internet, and, you know, things were still shipping, so I was really fortunate. It was the sunflower oil that was going to get me. And I was really lucky that I listened to my kids.
I'm Sierra. I'm the director of Appalachia School of Holistic Herbalism, the oldest herbal study school in the Southeast, which I took over 20 years ago from my teacher, who started in 91. And we also have a large apothecary, custom blending extracts and dried herb apothecary. And during COVID, we had a huge rush on herbs and people looking for herbs that could help them, support them in potentially not getting COVID or healing from COVID. And Yeah, so there was a huge rush on elderberry specifically and echinacea, which are two huge immune boosters. I always can't say immune boosters. Immune boosters and antiviral elderberry. And so, you know, I had some herbalist friends who were trying to like stockpile it from the big distributors. And my take is that to use the exotic invasives. So exotic invasives are herbs that were brought over usually from Asia or some other place, sometimes for soil erosion, soil control, hedges and such, and then they take over and choke out the native plants. And a lot of people really hate the exotic invasive herbs. And my take is that most of us in this country are exotic invasives, humans, right? And so we should utilize the plants as much as we can. A great way to eradicate them, or at least keep them at bay, is to use those plants. Whereas echinacea is a very slow-growing prairie plant, and our prairies are being depleted and overgrazed and diminishing. Elderberry is a pretty slow growing woodland plant, and we need to harvest the berries, so that takes a long time for the berries to reproduce. Meanwhile, we have Japanese honeysuckle and Japanese knotweed, which are just, you know, taking over. You can harvest a ton of it and barely make a dent in the stand of it. Japanese honeysuckle is a great substitute herb for echinacea. I never like to say like a substitute specifically, because I feel like plants are like people. We wouldn't say Lori's gonna be Sierra now, but in some cases Lori can do just as good of a job as I can at things, and some cases she'll do even better. Trying to use those very prolific plants that are considered invasives as medicine is my point. I don't know.
So before we chat about specifics, I wanted to ask in general, what overall qualities would you say makes an herb / vegetable good to have around in a time of crisis, contributing to it being particularly useful in matters of food and medicine security?
Okay, I think qualities that would make it particularly good in supply chain break would be that it grows under harsh conditions. It has multiple uses. So something like the weeds are the ones that I would reach for. And ones like dandelion, for instance, that's not one of my favorite herbs on my list for today, but that all parts of the plant could be used, and they'll grow if the soil is eroded or if it's been turned under or if construction's come through. So looking for those that are medicine and food.
And I would look for a plant that is prolific. I think about Japanese knotweed, which is everywhere. It's delicious to eat, it makes medicine, and it's readily available. So I would be looking for something that was readily available, but I also would want to harvest that in a way that it continued to be readily available. Because what we're seeing now with the newfound popularity in foraging, everybody's foraging, but not a lot of people are foraging in a way that is conscious about what happens when you over forage. And certainly ginseng is the prime example of that. But we are seeing so many medicinal natives that are being foraged out of existence, because people have found a way to make either money out of it, or because it's a fun thing to do. And yeah, it is a fun thing to do, but to be conscious about how much you can take, how much you should take, and should you take any at all, is really going to be very important.
As Miss Byron is saying that, I was taught you shouldn't be able, if you're foraging, you should not be able to tell that you were even there. No more than 20% at most. So that's really important. I wanted to say that. When I grow medicine, I don't baby plants. I want to know that plants can be tough on their own. I don't do a lot to them. I do sing to them, and I do energy work. I don't want to have to go and get plants every year. I want something that is either perennial or self-seeds, or that I can collect seeds, and if I have to baby them a little. If the plants aren't tough, how are they going to help you? You know, I mean, really, They got to be tough on their own. They don't need me. So I didn't realize this. It was pointed out to me that my living room in Manhattan was a garden. So I don't care where you live. Get a pot, get five plants and learn them. You know, and that way you have, I think the relationship you have with a plant has a lot to do with how much medicine it gives of itself to you.
Strong plants, strong medicine.
Yeah. I feel like everybody pretty much covered it. The only other thing I might add to that is as far as what makes it useful in a sort of crisis, supply crisis, might be the storageability of it, of a plant. For instance, you know, spring greens is on my, wild spring weeds is on my list of three herbs. But some of them don't store as well. And if, you know, that crisis is caused by contamination, you know, some sort of bio crisis, then we would also want to look to plants that we can dry or freeze or make into medicine that stores for a long time as well. It's like chickweed is a great wild spring green, but it doesn't store well. So we really need to harvest that every spring. So that might not be as useful in that type of a crisis. So
diving more into the weeds here, pun intended, what are your top picks for the herbs or vegetables that you would see for food and medicinal security? We'll start with your top three, and if there's time, we can add a few more on, because I know it's so hard to narrow it down.
Okay. My top three are nettles, urtica dioica, oat straw, milky oats, same plant, oatmeal, which is a Vena sativa, and then golden seal, Hydrastis canadensis. This has been eliminated from North Carolina pretty much. Golden seal has. It's in the Cherokee. It's protected in the Cherokee areas and some far west places. I've never seen it in the wild. I've put it places and it naturalized. But I'm really happy to see so much enthusiasm around this plant. People are throwing the seeds and cutting the rhizomes up and making more plants. It's a very slow grower, but the rhizomes are very generous. You can take and if you cut it in pieces, the nodes will form a new crown and a plant in for the next year. With nettles, it grows like a weed. It's there on the end, and it loves to have its feet near water, not right on the water. Some folks have a hard time with it. You'll put it somewhere and it doesn't like that spot, but it'll show up somewhere else. I like to call it seaweed of the land. I think there's other people that refer to it that way. It's just so densely rich in nutrients, vitamin A, C, E, K. It's rich in calcium and iron. The K is hard to find in a lot of places, so that's a good one. Young spring greens, you can substitute layer your lasagna, make a pesto. Nourishing infusions are a lot of herb, steep for a long time and boiling water topped over it. There's many ways to use nettles. And then the oat straw, milky oats are very supportive of the nervous system. We eat our oatmeal. It's high in protein, it's high in magnesium, and you can, you know, it's just so supportive of the whole body. Those are my three favorites.
Those are my three favorites too, as are her three and her three. But the three I want to talk about are ramps, plantain, and mugwort. I'm going to do ramps first because I think we all love ramps. We love the way they smell. We love the way they taste. Again, they are being over-harvested. If you are going into the forest to take ramps, take a tiny few and then go plant them on your own land. They love to colonize. I put ramps in 4 years ago and I'm finally at the place where I can take a few of them out. So if you have land, put ramps on them. Don't just go to the farmer's market and buy a big clump that has come from who knows where. So I really want to encourage you to grow that one because it's it's endangered. It really is. And once chefs outside this region discovered it, you know, for years it was just, we have a ramp festival, we have it with some eggs, and it's lovely. And then somebody in New York discovered ramps, and we were screwed. So grow ramps, if you can, grow them. They're easy to grow. They're like any allium. They're easy to grow. They're generous. They're wonderful. So grow some.
They're
woodland, absolutely. I was going to bring, I love that we have some show and tell. I was going to bring show and tell, and then I didn't, but as it turns out, I don't have to. My next plant is plantain. Look down. Mm-hmm. Look down. It is one of the most generous spring allies you will find anywhere. I remember being at a festival and someone had just gotten bitten by a mosquito the size of a Volkswagen.
We found a tiny one.
Yeah, oh, there's tons of them down there. Yeah. And all you have to do is chew it up, put it on the itch, and it gets lesser and lesser and lesser. That's wonderful. How many times have you been bitten, stung, whatever? This is a miracle plant. In fact, if I were to grab this, which is stinging nettle, I could chew on this and put it on the nettle sting, and it would take some of the sting out, not all of it. But the other thing about this is that it's edible. Now, I wouldn't eat it when it's a big, powerful-looking plant. I'd make medicine then. But when it's young, it's delicious, like kale, collard spinach. It's a remarkable plant. It self-seeds easily. It is, I didn't give you its Latin, but it's Plantago major, and it's everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. The third one I want to talk about is mugwort. Now, these powerful women are all genuine herbalists. I am a folkloric herbalist, so I can't tell you how much tea to drink for your height and body weight, but I can tell you what magic happens, and that's what I want to talk about with mugwort, Artemisia vulgaris. It's in the same family of plants that give us the green fairy, Artemisia. So it is everywhere. TikTok made a star out of mugwort, and nobody could keep it in stock because, oh my God, it's amazing. It is amazing. And it's everywhere. It is a big honking weed. I tell people, go to the parking lot of the barbecue restaurant and look at the place where they haven't used the weed eater, and you'll find mugwort. It's everywhere. So what we've known for years, for centuries, is that mugwort is a dream tonic. If you have nightmares, night terrors, it brings them down. If you can't remember your dreams, it brings them up. But the other thing we've discovered about mugwort is that it shifts the veil between matter and spirit. So if you are sitting with someone who is doing their best to cross the veil into the next existence, mugwort is your ally. Now, I want you to be careful with mugwort because it is a very lightweight abortifacient. So if you don't know how it's going to affect you, wear gloves when you work with it. But cannot recommend mugwort, Artemisia vulgaris, enough.
So when I was first posed this question, I was thinking, okay, so not on the herb side, but what's important? And I thought, food first. And I went with nettles also. I have a condition where I'm usually iron deficient. It's a blood thing. And nettles has, you need vitamin C to process the iron. And it's really easily assimilated. And I drink nettles infusions about 8 ounces four times a week. And every 3 weeks, I raise my hemoglobin 1 point. So food first. I had the flu. My neighbor brought me nettles tea. I felt so much better. Food first. Any woman pregnant, postpartum, actually anytime, anybody who feels down a little bit, nettles will bring you, just feed your system all these different vitamins and minerals. Plus, I feed my plants nettles. The plants love the vitamins and nutrients from nettles. My grandma taught me that one. Nettles. So, and then I'm thinking, okay, next thing was people get sick. What can we give them for that? And again, we were only given three, so I had to think about what does a lot. So also, yeah, nettles reproduces very easily. My second one was garlic. I used to work with preschool, and I took garlic every day to not get sick. Doesn't care if it's a virus or a bacteria. Easy to grow, almost everywhere. So garlic was my second one. I was pretty close to plantain for my third one, but my husband has colitis, so we give him plantain to soothe the system. And I get bug bites, I get bee bites. So, but anyway, I changed my mind. I am a big fan of cannabis in all of its forms, all of them. I've been out west where it's more legal and the herbalists have been studying, and a friend of mine went to Israel where they've been studying for years. The best medicine is 50-50 for pain, THC, CBD. There's no buzz, but people are in pain. So that was my third thing, was pain. Cannabis is fiber. Cannabis is seeds. It's food. It's everything. So that was my third one, was a general category of cannabis.
So for food security, I picked wild spring greens in general. So especially ones that carpet the ground, take over as ground covers, like chickweed, as we mentioned. When I first moved to my botanical sanctuary in Sandy Mush, my neighbor was like, "Oh, you're an herbalist, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, what? How can I get rid of the chickweed in my garden?" And I was like, "Well, you could eat it." And she's like, "Huh, no, really, how do I get rid of the chickweed in my garden?" And I'm like, "No, really, you eat it." So these are herbs like purple dead nettle is another one that just carpets the whole garden. Spring mustard greens and lamium is purple dead nettle, mustard greens, wild mustards, and Chenopodium album, lamb's quarters. So lamb's quarters is ones that people weed out of their garden. It's in the same family as spinach, to plant their spinach, and it's got more calcium, magnesium, iron than spinach. So it's like, why are we wasting all this, you know, time, energy, money to buy seeds with something that's already there, more nutritious, more tenacious. So wild spring greens in general, daylilies specifically. So daylilies are, you know, not native, but they are become naturalized and take over, and you get big stands of daylilies. And most people know them as a pretty flower, but they are medicinal and edible, and all parts are edible. So the flowers are edible. You can stuff them with goat cheese or pesto or whatever you want to stuff them with. You can dry them and make tea out of them. They're demulcent. They're high in vitamins. In China, they dry them and the buds as well. You can tempura batter the buds and fry them. You can pickle the buds, the flower buds. So they dry the petals, and it's called golden needles in China. And they use it to thicken soups and broths and sauces. So you can dry them and use them over the winter, or use them fresh, or pickle them and preserve them that way. The young shoots, the young greens, are edible as a spring vegetable. So you can steam them or eat them raw, and they're delicious and super prolific. And then the roots are also edible, cooked like potatoes, and that's a good starchy tuber. And, you know, if you have a stand of them, you won't get rid of them unless you really, really want to. And they're just going to keep spreading, and you're going to have more and more food and medicine from the daylilies. And then my third one is sort of cheating. So in Chinese medicine, anything from nature is that's used in healing is considered an herb. So they use flying squirrel dung, dragon bone, gems and minerals, right? So I'm choosing egg as my third herb for food security. So eggs are used medicinally in herbalism. There's an alchemist preparation called oil of egg that's used for the skin, for burns, for hair, teeth, nail growth. It's also used internally for joint pain. Egg has glucosamine in it, tons of calcium, silica in it. So it's also the oil of egg in the alchemical preparation is also used for the heart. cholesterol, actually. So it's used topically and internally as a medicine. And then eggs are just, you know, this prolific, excellent, healthy protein source for people. And then the eggs make chickens as well. So that is just such a sustainable food source. If you're growing your own eggs or somebody in your community is and you're supporting that poultry farmer. And then the eggshells can be used in the garden. The eggshells can be used on your pets. The eggshells can be taken internally. Eggshells are a whole nother herbal preparation. So there's just gazillions of uses for eggs. Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool that when we asked you all to pick this, like, you guys weren't conferring with one another, to my knowledge, and yet we have this, like, nice complete picture where we've got things that touch upon the stress and the mood issues that might arise under times of crisis. You know, you've got the nourishment of the deep, the vitamins, you've got a little touch of the magic, you've got the animal systems coming into play. Like, it's just, it's so well-rounded how this flowed down the table.
So in the event of future disruptions to normal supply chains, such as what we saw early on in the COVID-19 pandemic, what would you suggest are measures that can help communities be better prepared? Are there any actions that you took during COVID that helped others get access to food, herbal medicine, and or supplies?
I'm on the board of Asheville Herb Fest here. And so one year we had to take a hiatus because of COVID-19. But some of us went to the old location at the farmer's market and had a smaller market. And I noticed that year and the following year, so much enthusiasm around gardening. And it was really refreshing that people were teaching us things. They were coming and saying, this is what I've tried. I ordered there was a seed shortage, and it's a good thing, right? Because then maybe people started being aware, I need to save my seeds. But I feel like no matter where you are, if you're in a camper, in the back of your truck, in an apartment, sharing space, you can do container gardening. You can do things in small trays, egg carton trays. Even seed bomb vacant city lot with natives and woodland medicinals in the forest. There's so much national forest, you know. And then the foraging is extremely important. Like, ID is very critical, but that we can wild forage sustainably, because a lot of times many things you can just take the tops. And many things, like the spring, like Sierra was talking about, the things that come up, like chickweed's not as resilient if you needed something year-round. But to be able to, like, mark your calendar and say, okay, I came March 15th and look for this here on this wild lot, you know, like, just kind of plan on that year-round. There's going to be certain foraged wild things that you can take a lot of it and eat healthy. And the resilience of the wild things under drought or too much rain, that diet is going to change. It's going to shift because the species, they showed themselves during this time too. Like, I saw more lobelia and flotta during corona times. So, you know, it showed up, and it's a very supportive herb for the lungs. It makes these little pretty little blue purple flowers, but also makes these balloons, and I just scatter those seeds. So, you know, when you're walking along a trail and you're it's late summer, early fall, go ahead and throw those seeds around. Divide those roots, and then you can have a spot to come back to.
And I'm going to piggyback on that and talk about the importance of community gardening. Not everybody has a place where they can garden, but most communities, urban, suburban, and certainly rural, you can find someone whose grandmother grew a garden on a half acre of land, but they don't garden anymore. And you can come in, and the thing that probably will save us, if anything can, is getting to know your neighbors. I mean, we all think that we are connected on the World Wide Web, and I talked to somebody today in Australia, and I talked to somebody else in Britain today. But knowing who that weird person next door is and finding out who they are, who they really are, is going to save you. They're going to save you, not your friend on the internet. So it's scary. It's a lot easier to know people online And we know that that's true because we're belligerent to each other online. It's scarier to figure out that person who has the political sign you don't like. And so you don't approach them with your righteous indignation. You approach them by saying, I've got some really good tomatoes this year, and there's no way I can freeze or can them all. You want some tomatoes? And it'll make a difference, I promise you. But finding ways that you can garden together as a community will also be a really good thing to do. I think that's all I've got to say about that.
The first thing we can do is get rid of these freaking lawns. There's no reason for a lawn. We have lawns because the aristocracy had lawns, and they worked on it, so we all wanted to look rich, so we made lawns. Nobody needs a lawn. It doesn't serve any purpose. It takes a lot of chemicals to maintain. Like, what the, and then we'd all be outside, and we wouldn't need the lawnmowers and stuff anymore. So I'm a big believer. I was just reading a story about a family in Michigan, and they finally got their whatever organization from their neighborhood to say, okay, they've been finding them for years, and now they said, okay, you can grow your stuff, because the neighbors are coming eating off their lawn. I forgot the first part of the question, but as people are talking, that's what came to me.
I think you answered it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long weekend already on Saturday since yesterday tabling and setting up Thursday. But I think the question was, what are we doing since COVID to help support food security?
When you finish, I have one more thing I want to. I'm sorry. What I did to support COVID, there's a plant, a thing called Usnea, which you can't grow. And I'm pretty sure that it's going to be important to mankind's survival because we can't grow it. It grows on the tops of the trees. A friend of mine, hemp stopped being as popular when the price dropped. So a friend of mine was a processor. So I had, believe it or not, like 3 pounds of Usnea. We cut wood in the winter, so I collect it. And I train people who come visit me on the farm. When you see it, just pick it up and give it to me. We did a double extraction. We put it in 1-ounce bottles, and we walked around downtown Asheville and gave it to homeless people.
How do you spell that?
Usnea. Okay. Old man's beard. Okay. There's a few of them. But that was something that we did to help people, the general population, deal with COVID. And it seemed pretty effective. I can't explain why, but it did.
Yeah, it's a great lung antiviral, lung immune booster.
Do you want me to repeat the question?
Sure, yeah.
Okay,
thanks.
So it was, in the event of future disruptions to normal supply chains, such as what we saw in the early on the COVID-19 pandemic, what would you suggest are measures that can help communities be better prepared? And then were there any actions that you took during COVID that helped help others get access to food, medicine, and or supplies? So.
Okay, great. Yeah. I'm going to echo what Byron said, which is connect with your neighbors and your community. One of my friends and mentors that mentored people all across the world, Frank Cook, he used to always say you should know the people within a day's walk of you. And when COVID first started, I live in a little town, Little Sandy Mush, named after, they used to make moonshine, sour mash, and it would get some sand in the moonshine. So, and you have sandy mash, but anyway. So a bunch of people in Little Sandy Mush got together at a farm, and we all wrote down what are people's skills, what are people's resources, what are people's knowledge base, and start a little community database of how we can support each other, which was pretty cool. We haven't really done anything with it, but it's nice that it's there. And I also online, conversely, started a local Asheville plant swap group, so people can just, no sales, just trade plants or give away free plants, daylilies that are so freaking abundant, or nettles that it's actually like a gift if someone comes out to my land and takes some and spreads the wealth and abundance. And nature is just so abundant. There's never actually a lack. It's just that we've got it so twisted with our time and our convenience and the middleman of money that we don't even have time to use all the abundance of food and medicine that there is and harvest it. Yeah, Asheville Plant Swap is an online resource for local plant trading that I started.
I want to add something. Sarah, didn't you start NC Plant Savers too on Facebook? Was that you?
Like 20 years ago.
Yeah, so it's like still there. The highway comes through or there's a development. Now, I'm a part-time realtor and I got into it because I thought, I'll bridge the gap between herbalist and realtor. If people think they have something on their land, they're cool with you walking around and just checking it out. But as soon as you say, hey, you've got this thing, there's this discomfort there. So it's really nice with the prolific stuff, like the plant swap. But join NC Plant Savers too, and we'll do some rescues together. And then another thing that's one of my most fun things, we did it right in 2020, on March 2020, in bulk 2020. We got together at my house right before everything shut down, and everybody brought one thing for fire cider. And because apple cider is easy to press, you can take the juice, you can, you know, the naturally occurring bacteria and yeast that's in the air is going to make a mother if you don't boil your cider and can it. And we made fire cider together, and everybody brought something. Lori came, and it was great. And then you can add the honey later or leave it just as a spicy cider. So get together with the neighbors within a walking day and do that, or just swap plants.
And this may not apply to any of you, but there is a big old Presbyterian church on Merriman Avenue. And when the pastor there was a woman that I knew, because I used to do a lot of interfaith work, she said it costs so much money every month to mow the beautiful Protestant lawn that is required of the mainline denomination churches. And she said, I just want to dig it up and plant a garden. Well, after she was gone, someone did that. So if you belong to a church that has a big old lawn and you are paying money every month to mow a lawn, why don't you start quietly? No, don't start quietly. Be big. Be big and say, I will help you turf out that lawn. I and my friends will help you turf that out so that we can grow food to feed people. And you'll be surprised at what happens.
Well, thank you all so much for sharing your time today and your wisdom. We'd like to take a moment to let the audience know if there's any interesting projects or products that you have coming out or going on, how best they might be able to follow up with you and learn more from you in the future if you want to share your deets.
Okay, yeah. RedMoonHerbs.com. We actually bought an old church right during COVID. United Methodist Church out at the base of Pisgah. If you've been to Pisgah, it's going to be Pisgah View Ranch is going to become a state park. They're still working on it in a couple of years, but there's cabins there. There's also Ashley's tents that are right on the corner there at Davis Creek and Davis Chapel. And Greenheart Gardens is nearby, and you have camp spots too. So we do offer some free classes or sliding scale. And we hope to just, you're welcome if you do have a special class you want to teach, putting food by, gardening, just reach out to us, Jeannie@redmoonherbs.com, and we'll make it happen. We'll collaborate.
I'm Byron Ballard. You can get me at my website, which will be changing soon, but it's myvillagewitch.com, and you can get me at info@. I read tarot on Tuesdays at Raven and Crone on Merriman Avenue. But I'm just around gardening, forest farming as I can, and teaching classes where I can too. And I just want to thank all of you for being here and listening today. If anything can save us, it's you. It's us.
This is Lori. My farm is called Greenheart Gardens. Obviously green because of the plants, you know, the green. But green is your heart chakra color, and it's the color of money. very important, you know, support me so I can eat and teach. We have campsites. My product line is called Herb Mama with two M's, M-A-M-M-A. Herbmama.com has my teaching schedule on it. I do a bunch of woodland teaching, how to grow in the woods, how to figure out site selection. In August, I'm doing a class with the Organic Growers School there. I'm also doing a weekend workshop, hands-on, how to make fertilizer, how to put it on the plants based on plants, how to harvest the herbs, what part of the plants do you use, how do you dry them, how do you make an oil. We're going to make an oil, we'll make a tincture, we'll probably make a salve. And then Sunday, we'll do my woodland class. So that's going to be in August. Herbmama.com has the sign-up and the class descriptions. I'm doing some other stuff as well, but those are the big events.
I'm Appalachia School of Holistic Herbalism on Facebook, and if you're on Instagram and TikTok, I'm Witch Weed Witch. And right now our certification courses are on hold, but we are planning to do more courses in the fall. And I'm doing Wednesdays with Weeds, which is like apprenticeship style. It's basically come out to my land in Sandy Mush and harvest all those weeds you can use as medicine, help me in the garden, and I teach you how to use them and how to make medicine out of them, and you can take home a bunch of plants with you to share that abundance. And I'm also doing lives on TikTok and Instagram sometimes. And I have a large apothecary. I do custom blending tea blends called Certain Teas. And our booth is B28 if you want to come get my card for that or check out what the products we've got.
And also Lori has a booth. So
yeah, I have a booth here too where I'm selling products that I made from plants that I grow. The bee products are from hives that are on my land, and, you know, other than there's two plants that I don't grow, but pretty much everything else. And I have brochures here also. Thank you.
And Red Moon Herbs is here as well. So, all right. Thank you, everyone, for coming. We would like to, for our people listening at home, and, of course, everyone here, we would like to invite our listeners to consider supporting us through a humble little donation. We have a Patreon page, and options are $1, $5, or $10. And the donation goes towards helping us with future projects like this and taking our show on the road, doing on-site reviews and interviews at herb farms and schools. And another way you can support us is to help get the word out about our project is by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. And thank you again to our wonderful panelists and audience, and a special thanks, shout out to Lori Collins-Jenkins, founder and formulator of Sister of Mother Earth, as well as one of the organizers of this amazing Herb Fest. Thank you for inviting us today, and also thank you to Ginny. So thank you, everyone. And we have flyers with information about our podcast.
Can we take questions?
Yeah, well,
we don't have time.
There's supposed to be another
panel. I don't know if they're here.
Yeah, sorry, just real quick. I just started to turn my front yard into, you know, getting rid of the yard.
Woohoo!
As suggested. And sheet mulching, is that, I'm laying cardboard down first and to put the soil and compost over it, and then Is that okay?
Yeah. When you on your gardening is great.
Yes. You have our approval.
When you first start gardening like that, there's no connection between the microbes and the plants. So you can do magic and recreate that. You get some horsetail. Silica, you can get it. I don't have it here, but if you're local, you can get it from me. And I put that in my mix to make like a tea. And the silica lines up and makes that pathway like that. 2-3 waterings, and you get that again.
Silica.
Or a comfrey tea.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I put my tea mix, it's comfrey, nettles, and yarrow, and then we put in, I usually bring my mix with me, but nobody's ever bought it, so I didn't bring it this year. And then the horsetail for the first 2 or 3 waterings. That's what Grandma Rosie says to that.
Thank you.
So
thank you. Good luck.
Is the person doing the class next here? They're here. Oh, okay.
I don't get to see you nearly enough.
I'm never in town.
That's like the first wild child travel. Yeah. Wait, did you